This episode is brought to you by IVP. Use promo code IVPHEAR40, that's IVPHEAR40, at ivpress.com for 40% off and free shipping on any resources mentioned in this episode.
I'm Tara Beth Leach, and this episode is sponsored by Northern Seminary, where I earned a Master's of Divinity so proudly. Did you know that Northern Seminary has been enrolling women since the beginning? Our first student in 1913 was Amy Lee Stockton, a total legend. She went on to become one of the nation's leading evangelists, reaching thousands for Christ. And since then, we have equipped thousands of women to serve as pastors, practitioners, church planters, and ministry leaders across the globe. We believe that the church cannot live into her fullness without women developing their gifts and living out their call to leadership. Northern has flexible programs, world-class faculty, and a diverse community, and we empower the church to grow the gospel and live with unwavering allegiance to Jesus' kingdom. Your calling matters. Take the next step and visit northernseminary.edu to learn more.
This is IVP.
Welcome to Hear Women from InterVarsity Press, where we listen to the voices of women for the good of the church. I'm your host, Darina Lazo Gilmore-Young. Lena Abujamra is no stranger to the impact of pain and suffering. As a child growing up in Lebanon, she saw her dad use his medical expertise to treat wartime patients, which eventually motivated Lena to become a physician herself. She confronted pain head-on as a pediatric ER physician and then started a nonprofit serving refugees in Lebanon, Syria, and beyond. Lena is not afraid to go to hard places and bring hope, healing, and truth, whether in her professional work or in the toxic church environments she has endured and continues to heal from. Lena is an amazing model of what it means to rely on Christ in the midst of pain and suffering and to become more like Him as we give ourselves in service to others. So here's my conversation with Lena Abujamra. Lena, I am so excited to have this conversation with you today. I have followed your work for several years and just really resonate with so much of your heart. And I want to jump in by talking about this theme of service. So service is a clear theme throughout your life and your ministry journey. It's definitely been one of those themes that has been resonant for my life as well. Can you tell us about a moment when you first realized you found joy and fulfillment in serving others?
My background probably is a big part of my story in that I grew up in a place while watching my father, who was probably the picture of service. He was a plastic surgeon in Lebanon during the war in the 70s and 80s in Beirut. You know, people hear plastic surgeon and they sort of right away think, you know, LA and facelifts and all, you know, the Botox and stuff. But that was not the kind of plastic surgeon he was. You know, if you're in medicine, you understand that there's layers to plastic surgery. And his goal was really reconstruction. And he went into it because of, I knew the story that he had gone into that field because of cleft lips and palate repair, kids and whatnot. And so I sort of grew up with this idea that there was something that was bigger, even outside of this Christian worldview, that we're to help our human people, you know, and then being a Christian sort of added that deeper layer of, oh, well, we're here on this earth to help others. Like it sounds so generic, and yet it is so intrinsic to who Jesus was and the way that he lived. And so I think watching my father during the civil war in Lebanon put work, you know, and when I say work, I mean like going to the hospital under bombs and in dire circumstances. Why? Not because he was making any more money, but because he was helping save lives and sometimes lives of people that he didn't even agree with. There were the people that were wounded in the war. And so I think that had a tremendous impact on me, even as I look back. And of course, I ended up becoming a doctor And there's a lot of reasons for that. But honestly, I think that I would be remiss not to give credit to my father in that. And then we were very blessed in being my family when we moved from Beirut to Green Bay, Wisconsin. I was a senior in high school and we were sent to camp in the summers. And I think that was one way for my family to get my parents to get a break. There's a lot of reasons why people send their kids to summer camp. But another reason was honestly was to try to instill in us some of the Christian principles as young adults that would go with us for life. And that camp also had leaders that very much believed in servant leadership. You know, it was something that really they genuinely taught from the Bible. And I, in that formative season of my young adulthood life, understood very clearly that leadership is service. So this wasn't just about like helping people who need it, but it was a way to be a leader. So I don't know that I ever thought, oh, I want to go, you know, do service. I wanted to be a leader. I felt like I was stepping into what God had created me to be. And my venue was service. And I felt like that was the only venue that, or the main venue, like you don't lead from above, you lead from the trenches. And so it fit my personality, it impacted that mentality, that perspective impacted my career choice. I ended up going into emergency medicine. Philosophically, I felt like that was a good field where you never said no to anyone in the ER. You can't, by law, you can't say no to people. And so I was offered early on as a pediatric ER doctor, the opportunity to do a lot of short-term missions. And I think once you catch that bug and you travel and spend time in the Amazon jungle or wherever we ended up, you know, I've spent so much time in the, you know, Middle and South America. And then later, of course, now our work in Lebanon, you just catch the bug and it's hard to ever go back to a life that doesn't include some form of service.
I really love that you just honed in on that nuance for us, that leadership is service and that perspective of the servant leadership. I think that has been true in my own life as well. I didn't really think about it as, you know, service or outreach that was my life goal. It was part of already who I was. I remember on my first mission trip that I signed up to do, it was to the country of Haiti. Our group leader, actually, who eventually became my husband, had us do one of those spiritual gifts tests. And what came up on that test for me was this gift of mercy. And it made me curious, like, what is that? What is this gift of mercy? How might I use that? I was already a leader. And I'm recognizing also that in your journey as a medical doctor, as a missionary teacher, and then eventually even now, you know, writing and publishing books, that you also have shown this kind of idea, this gift of mercy, but it's been through your leadership and through your different career paths. What do you believe kind of ties all these vocations together? And what have you learned kind of on your journey about mercy?
You know, I think the idea of mercy, I think to clarify it is really, and I think it helped to sort of look at some of the definitions to understand, like you wake up 20, 30, 40 years later and go, oh my gosh, I guess I do have the gift of mercy. And I guess I'd never even noticed. And I think it's really the idea of stepping into somebody's pain and offering understanding and compassion. But I think the other side of that is to help them to spread hope that there is another way, that there is light, even in the darkest circumstances, that there is healing, whether it's physical or non-physical, in places of deep pain. And so I've always been attracted to those areas that are maybe darkest, most hurting. You know, I like maybe some of it, again, growing up in Beirut, you sort of, the ground is set to sort of see a lot of things that maybe other people who, you know, grow up in Middle America might not be privy to. Although nowadays you can see ugliness everywhere. But the reality is that the common thread in whether I write or whether I, you know, serve in the church, you know, for some time I was a women's ministry director and did a number of other roles in the church, or whether I go and do our global work. Our ministry does, you know, a lot of our ministry is now global work in Lebanon, started with Syrian refugees, and now we serve Lebanese. There's a lot of needs in Lebanon for all sorts of people, and then now in Uganda as well. And so the common thread is really to bring hope where hope is needed, which I think is mercy. It's the spreading of hope and giving people the idea that this is not forever. And that hope is in the person of Jesus Christ. And so the theme, I think, that ties everything together in writing and in speaking and in serving is the hope that comes through Jesus. And I think he is the picture of mercy, right? Philippians chapter 2. I mean, the king who became man and showed us what it looked like to wash feet, but also to sacrifice himself for the greater good. And I think I think that is probably the most, you know, powerful example that we can go back to again and again and again.
And I appreciate, too, that you're identifying that it's not a certain personality type. It's not, you know, just necessarily being like a helper behind the scenes, that it was manifesting for you in the way that God designed you as a leader, as a doctor, as someone who really cared deeply about those who are vulnerable. And I think that can give us even a broader imagination for what those mercy gifts are and how they can be expressed uniquely through women. You know, I wonder if you could share a little bit more about, you mentioned your ministry, and I know that Living with Power is this humanitarian relief ministry. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what that is and how you're involved in that?
Well, I felt called to teach the Bible when I was doing my fellowship in pediatric emergency medicine back in the year 2000, 2001, a long time ago. And I, you know, the example of what a Bible teacher was at the time was Beth Moore. And, you know, everybody wanted to be like Beth Moore. But honestly, it was, I didn't know what it would look like. I just, it was really a lot of the unknown. I just knew that God had put in me a passion to teach the Bible. And I happened to be a doctor. And I did not feel called away from medicine. I had spent a lot of years to get there. Somehow I thought God would work it out to be bivocational. And so a few years later, after starting like the blogs of the early 2000s and, you know, what people were doing at the point, at that point, even before I started writing books, I started blogging and eventually sort of had this foresight to start a nonprofit. And there was a lot of reasons for that. But as a doctor, I saw that medical missions would perhaps be part of the story somehow. And I figured somewhere down the road, it would be important to have an entity that I can house whatever God had in mind. And so there was a lot of like, this was a step of faith. I didn't know what that would look like. I didn't know what it would serve. And so I started Living with Power. And my passion really was to teach the Bible. That continues to be probably my number one passion. I started looking for ways to, whether it was to teach a Bible study or to write a Bible study. I didn't have a publisher then, but we would just put together materials. But it was started to create this body of work under this organization. And eventually, I mean, I think in terms of like the motto or the theme, my goal has always been to provide biblical truth for everyday life. And now as we form, so 2014 comes around, I go through a big church fiasco. I leave the local church and wrote about it and whatnot. We might end up talking about it a little bit in a bit. But that was a big point of crisis in my Christian life. And out of that crisis was birthed sort of the work that we're formally doing in Lebanon right now. Started with serving Syrian refugees and the rest, as they say, is history. And so I think to plainly put what Living with Power does, because people are always trying to understand, are you a medical mission organization? Do you do humanitarian aid? Or are you a Bible study teacher? And we do both. And really, what our goal is to help people build a faith that holds when life doesn't. And I think that really sums up sort of the theme of everything that I have done. I think the experiences God has put in my life, as well as my I gravitate towards the hard, the painful. I think even as an ER doctor, I think the Lord knew to put me in that capacity because I like that. I like going hard places. I think sometimes we try to avoid them or gloss over them, but I enjoy going to places, the harder, the better in a way. And it's because that's where the light of Jesus shines the brighter. And I found that the darker the areas that I've gone to, the easier it is to show Christ and the more open people are. And whether it's in the ER here in the United States or in Lebanon in the darkest places, it's been a gift to just provide that faith. And so we do it in writing and Bible study and try to model to people what it looks like, not just to live a faith that is around me, myself, and I, but to live a faith that extends to others who need it.
I love that. Well, and I love the way that your own passion for the medical world and helping to provide hope and alleviate people's pain also translated in a biblical way for you and what you are sharing. It's really inspiring. I know you have a book that's coming out called All Your Life.
We have early release copies, right? Woohoo!
Ooh, yay!
How nice it is. I know.
It's a beautiful cover.
You did such a great job, right? Love it.
So in the book, you explore what it really means to live for Jesus. And I wonder if you could just unpack that phrase for us a little bit more and, you know, how that connects to what you were sharing with your ministry.
Yeah, I think we have some preconceived ideas of what a Christian should look like, and never more than now, 2026. And while it's exciting to see certainly a revival spirit happening in the United States, you wonder how much of it is just a fad. Justin Bieber's a Christian. He just said Coachella. He just shared the gospel. You know, I mean, so it's kind of, you know, you watch that unfold on social media and there's people with huge numbers of followers. So it's a thing. And so I think, you know, inevitably when that happens in a culture, there's some unspoken conclusions that we draw. I kind of chuckled the other day. I really guard what I see on social media, but I was scrolling and I got a clip of an interview of a teacher that I actually like, but it was the kind of thing that you watch and your radar goes up because you think, wait, I'm not sure if I agree with this. And the concept of this interview, again, the interviewer and the interviewee are people that I respect, but the idea was that you said yes to God and look what God has done. And I think there's this idea that if you say yes to God, and I think, Dorina, you understand it probably more than anyone because I've watched your story on social media as well. And, you know, and I think there's this idea that somehow being a Christian, again, I don't even think necessarily the people who say it from a pulpit or from a platform necessarily mean it. But the clip is, if you say yes to God, everything is going to go smoothly. If you say yes to God, your life is going to have a lot of wins. And I think we are woefully wrong in what is a win for the kingdom. And just because you say yes to God does not mean that you're going to have the type of influence that you think you're going to have, or the size of the influence that you think you're going to have, or a front row to revival that you is godly. And you can ask God for good things, a godly marriage, godly kids, you know, a home that is filled with Christian values. And yet you might have said yes to God and brought your kids up in the Lord and now dealing with a child who's living a life that you can't even comprehend where they began to live that way because you didn't bring that into the home. And you start beating yourself. I don't have kids. I'm just using this as a conjecture, but you start beating yourself up. Well, maybe I did it wrong, or maybe it was my past sin. And it's all because of a false understanding of what it means to be a Christian. And so in this book particularly, I think all of my life message has been to try to deconstruct this idea. And I feel like the Spirit is always teaching me because I think I am just like everyone else. And I am so quick to question what is happening in my life because I'm not seeing the same type of results, let's say, that other people are projecting, that they may not even be living, but their social media clip is projecting. And so there's this constant sense of inadequacy and the sense of insecurity, like, am I doing it right? And what if I'm not called to this? And, you know, all the things that you that are rubbish, they're lies from the pit of hell, and they're based in this misunderstanding of what it means to really be a Christian and to live the Christian, surrendered, crucified Christian life. And so while all of my work now, as I step, you know, I started writing my first book 2013 on singleness, and every project that I've done, as I step back and look back at, including All Your Life, has been one or another version of this message that Jesus is worth all of your life. There's no question about it. There's not a thing that you're ever going to give up that he's not going to give you 1,000 times over in his person. But if you don't understand what it really looks like to be a quote-unquote successful Christian, you're going to end up in misery and pain and probably even will leave the Christian faith. So this version of the message is for Gen Zs. It is helping Gen Zs build a faith. Gen Zs are people who are 18 to 25, let's say, that general age. And it is helping that generation build a faith that holds when their life won't. Because inevitably, you and I know, because we're just a little bit outside of that era, I'm a little bit beyond you. But we all know that things happen that we don't plan on, that we don't want, that will make us question God and sometimes even lift our fist and go, how did you do this? I thought I did my part. I thought I played by the rules. And why am I now living the life that I didn't expect? And so this really walks young adults through every part of life and sort of summarizes in a neat, I think, easy to understand fashion of this is what the Christian life ought to look like. And hopefully it'll help them understand. I mean, the chapters range from, you know, your heart, your emotions, your church, your relationships, your money, et cetera, et cetera. It sort of addresses all of those areas in a young person's life that will help ensure that they're walking through the Christian life, not just with eyes wide open, but with hearts overflowing with joy, which is our calling in Christ.
Welcome to All Ears, the segment of the show where you'll hear from IVP staff who've been tuning in to today's conversation. Together, we come alongside you in each episode to reflect on these meaningful conversations and the fantastic books they remind us of. I'm Christine, and as always, I'm here with my coworkers, Rainer and Amanda.
It's inspiring and refreshing to listen to Lena's honesty in sharing her family background, her heart for serving others, and following God in contexts marked by pain and suffering.
And as we heard from Lena and Dorina, younger people in Gen Z are also craving direction on how to walk with God in authenticity and joy. I love how Lena has a heart to help people find real answers for life, faith, calling, relationships, and more in her book, All Your Life.
We know that God invites us to love him with all of who we are, but what does that actually look like when following Jesus feels hard and the questions we face feel overwhelming? In All Your Life, Lena candidly addresses the hard things about following Jesus as she shares insights for building a life of enduring discipleship.
And with the help of Lena's honest answers, practical guidance, and biblical wisdom, you can grow beyond a compartmentalized faith and discover the deep joy of walking with Jesus in every part of your life for the rest of your life.
If, like me, you want to ditch the pressure to act like a perfect Christian and truly connect with God in your real everyday life, check out the show notes for a special discount on All Your Life. Now let's get back to Lena and Darina's conversation.
You're listening to Hear Women from InterVarsity Press. I'm your host, Darina Lazo Gilmore Young, and today's guest is Lena Abijamra. So powerful. Yes and amen, sister. And I think about this because I am a mom of teenagers. You know, my girls are 14, 17, almost 20, who have lived a hard journey. Their dad died of cancer when they were little. And this is a book I want to hand to them. Thank you for the deep work there, because we need to have that realistic framework. And I think you're right. I mean, people maybe not intentionally trying to have this kind of prosperity gospel, or if you do this, you put this into the vending machine, then you're going to be blessed. But sometimes the language comes out that way, and then it's a disservice to those who are experiencing really hard things, to those who are going through these journeys that don't seem to add up. So I appreciate you sharing that and just being so transparent about, you know, your own journey with that. You alluded to this a little bit before, but I know that you have spoken a lot about your own experience with ministry wounds and church hurt. And one of the episodes that I watched of a program called Unshakable Moxie, you shared this. You said, "I used to think that church hurt was a wound that would heal and leave a scar. But lately, I've come to find out that church hurt is a lot more like a latent infection. It will go dormant for a long time, and then just like that, any kind of stress will cause a flare-up." I wonder if you could venture into that story a little bit more for us and talk about, you know, what was the process of changing your perspective here?
I just think any painful thing in life, I think you just think time will heal it and you'll just turn the page. And I think part of it, you think as a Christian, like God should heal you, but also even if, you know, that at some point you've learned your lessons and you've moved on. And for some people, it's a short period of time. And for others, it's long. And I, you know, for me, it took me even 10 years before I could even process to write about the, like, I, you know, the timeline between when I went through the episode of, you know, in the church, when, and I wasn't even personally abused. It was just being a victim of a spiritual abusive environment. So not personally, but more systemically. And to make that clear. And yet, it, I mean, so imagine if you were a personal, you know, personally wounded. This was systemic, which again, I think both hurt, but I can't imagine if it was even more personal. But with that in mind, living it was probably one of the best experiences in hindsight. Although honestly, I remember doing that Moxie video, Our Daily Bread's production, and can't believe how many emotions came to the surface. Even the video was an example of a wound that resurfaced, in that this was already after I'd written the book. I talked immensely about it. I thought I was fine. And then when the questions were asked and you were in that space where you're living in it, it was like classic PTSD. And you're like, you know, I cry like a baby. I always joke about it because I don't cry a lot, but it was emotional. And I think because it is emotional and because life does hurt, I think the gift of the season is understanding other people's pain, which is the gift of mercy, right? I mean, you come back to that. If you don't live it, how do you understand it? So how can you go to a space, you know, I think again, you don't have to have cancer to help a person with cancer, but it certainly helps, right? So you don't have to have experienced church hurt to help people who have experienced church hurt, but it helps. And so I think the Lord gifts allows certain people to go through certain experiences so that they can step into that world. I can't believe how many Christians have gone through church hurt. To this day, like the book came out 6 or 7 years ago, and to this day, people just gravitate to that message because it is a reality. And I think for me, the process of healing has happened in stages. And I would, you know, I like to think now I'm in a healthy church and it's a small church. It's nothing like the church I used to be in before. And, you know, I think, how do you get from here to here? You know, how do you do that? And because I meet a lot of people that are sort of, you know, they're out of the bad environment, but they're not willing to commit to the new environment. And I honestly think, like, I'd love to say, oh, there's an easy formula, but it just takes time and every human is different. I think you have to understand that the Lord works differently in different people. And I think the harder, like for me, I think I'm the type of person, you know, the Lord probably understood that I needed more time. He created me the way that I am. Yes. It also is a gift because I've been able to be very resilient in very hard areas, like working in the pediatric ER or going to do mission work with Syrian refugees or with the Lebanese. So that thickness that I have is also why maybe I need a little bit longer. But I think now there are triggers. You know, there's certain types of churches that I walk in that the wall goes up. I'm much more comfortable in a smaller, more authentic church when I go to certain types of places that remind me of I have to fight cynicism. I think that's probably the biggest battle that I face, which I think it's easy to hide behind cynicism and humor, dark humor. And I think it's authentic to admit when you're hurting. But it is a process, and I, you know, and there are certain types of people that I meet that remind me of the person that abused power. And I have to recognize that sometimes they're not the ones who are at fault. They've done nothing wrong. So I have to remind myself that I'm still dealing with some stuff. And I think it helps to talk about it with people who know. So therapy was a big part of my healing. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit that. I went to a Christian therapist for some time, and I think it was good for me to have a safe environment to discuss it. And I was joke and tell people, like, had I had a place in the church to discuss it, maybe I wouldn't have needed a therapist, but I didn't. And so I think you have to use resources, which sometimes includes getting, you know, help that way, or sometimes includes close family, friends, or whatever, however your circumstance, you know, and not be afraid to revisit that and to admit it. I think where I'm still hurting, I'm still weak. And I think the Lord, I mean, the beauty of the Lord and where you see his mercy and his compassion is that his best, like, God has a lot of awesome things, but probably my favorite thing about God is how human he becomes and how, you know, with Christ, the incarnation, and how even now in our pain, we have a Savior who sympathizes with our weaknesses. And somehow he's there with us in those dark moments, whether they're once every 10 years, a flare-up happens and you are faced with, maybe you go to a high school reunion and you see the person who hurt you years ago, or whatever your circumstances. And I think the understanding that there is a Savior who is still with me in this dark spot and will continue to help me if I slip into that pothole, he's going to help me come out of it, has probably been, this awareness of the presence of Jesus has probably been the biggest gift that I've had over the years to be able to overcome the pain that resurfaces from time to time.
You know, it's really helpful to hear your personal experience, but then even some of those practical things that you mentioned of how you walked through that journey. And, you know, part of our program here at Hear Women is for us to consider, you know, what are the things that we want the Big C Church to hear or to see as it regards women? And so just kind of reflecting a little bit on your own journey with mercy, with service, even with this church hurt, can you think about, you know, what is one thing that you want the Big C Church to see or to change about the way that they address women?
Well, you know, right now, I mean, I wrote for Gen Zs, but in general, as you look at the movement of Gen Zs, men are coming back to the church at an unbelievable rate. But also the other side of it is women are leaving at an unbelievable rate. And I think that's across all age groups, but particularly even in Gen Zs. I'm intrigued by that. And a lot of people have tried to weigh in on why that is. And I think, you know, I think there's probably a lot of reasons for it. But and I think it ties into what can the Big C Church does. So I would urge pastors and elders, especially in churches that don't tend to value women or have had the reputation of not valuing women, because they would say, we do value women. First of all, ask the woman in your church. If you're watching them leave, then you don't value women. Like, if you're looking at the data and your church is like, oh, more women are leaving, don't just pat yourself on the back going, oh, but more men are coming. If I don't care, that's great. You're winning with the men. But if more women are leaving, you're not communicating to the woman. And inevitably, you know, the idea that there should be, I mean, I think people of, you know, people of color would say the same.
What ultimately want the
putting people in the leadership that even if they don't have a label, having them be part of a leadership structure where you're hearing, you're not tone deaf to what that experience of, you know, the African-American community in your church or the woman in your church. If you're never even allowing them to weigh in or to speak into your
thing, that
the soul of your church, so to speak, then you're already behind. You're not going to win the woman. If you got a bunch of elders sitting in a room trying to figure out how to win the woman, you're already behind. So the big C church is like, talk to people that you're losing. I am interested in a moment of, can you look me in the eye when you talk to me and treat me like a human as I'm treated in every other sector of life? And do you understand, you know, that I am adding value to your church? That's it. Simple human stuff. This isn't even Christian stuff. We started off, you and I, talking about what mercy means. And I'm a person going, oh, I didn't even know I had the gift of mercy because I never even pursued that. And so stop forcing people to fit a mold of what you think mercy should look like or leadership should look like and free them to go and do the work that God's created them to do. And who knows, I think about our ministry, how many hundreds of thousands of people that we've helped through the gift of mercy. But it came when, you know, when I surrendered my life to the Lord to be the leader that He's created me to be. I think what women have done and what I did early on and what has opened the door for my ministry to grow, you know, the ministry God has given me that I'm stewarding, I think it has been that I've just followed God's leading and I've done it as a parachurch organization. But I think churches could be so empowered to bring women in and invite them to do the same work within the context of local church. So I think look at humans, less definitions, more real life, and always be thinking, what are some ways we can use this person's giftedness in a way that would glorify Christ? Don't be so threatened. You know, you're not having, it's like anything, like having a person come in and do something doesn't take away from what you're doing. And I think, you know, we're all guilty of that. That's not a male female thing. We all do it, even in the woman's world, right? I mean, you know, we go to a conference, we see someone doing something. Well, if they're doing it, then what am I going to be doing? And you feel like you're on the outside looking in. And I think we're all threatened in our little kingdoms, kind of wondering how we're going to, you know, become whatever we think God wants us to be. And God isn't worried about that. He's got space for everybody. And part of faith is believing that and living in it.
It's so, truly that dichotomy of the scarcity mindset versus the abundance mindset. That Jesus walks in abundance. And so I really appreciate the way that you articulated that. You know, just as we're kind of closing out our conversation here, I want to do what you're inviting the church to do. I want to just shout out a woman whose voice needs to be heard. And I wonder, is there someone that comes to mind for you whose work needs to be known or whose story needs to be told that you've come across in your trajectory?
What you're asking is important, right? Where are the hidden gems that aren't getting their time? And honestly, Doreen, I know this is going to sound cheesy and maybe people would, but I think you're one of them. I know you're part of the Red Buds. So the Red Bud is a group of writers that I used to be a part of, and you're part of that now. And you came across my Facebook through that. And you know, you are one of the people that always shows up in my thread somehow. So you're in my algorithm. And I think a lot of it has to do with your travel to Europe. I love travel. And so I think you take students. I've watched your trips. You take your daughters and students and you do a lot of camping. And you've written a lot, and you and what has made your story more powerful to me is the fact that you lost your husband and now are happily married. And so, look, I know a lot about you, and I've never met you before. And so, to me, the power of your story is sort of this real life person who is living the joy of the Lord. But like, you went through a lot of pain, and there are other people, you know, you watch on social media who've had different disasters strike. And I think disaster has a way of lowering the walls that we build. Like in social media, when you see somebody who's too perfect, it's hard to connect with that person. So it helps to hear the stories of pain so that you understand they're like us. So I think you're one of those voices. Another good voice that I think I'm going to be interviewing on her podcast soon is Stephanie Roussel, who's writing with IVP, has a book coming out soon. I met her at wrote me an email and sort of reached out. And she talks a lot about delighting in the Lord. And those are names that I think you might or might not hear again if you're listening to this podcast. And I think the mistake that we commit in our modern era, you know, Christian big church is we don't have space in our algorithms for those voices. Even as I tell you, like, even as I've thought about I give you 2, 3, 4 names. It's like, if you're not, like, this is the entire system now that if you don't have a platform, you barely are going to get, you know, get into the, it's like the MCATs, like you're going to be a doctor. Like if you don't get this much of a MCAT score, then don't even bother applying to med school. And it's sort of the message now in the Christian world is if you don't have the followers, you're not going to get a voice, which, and if you do get a voice, then you have to keep feeding it with followers and with sales. And so there's this personality-driven celebrity game that I think is needs to be destroyed. And I think the only way to do it is sort of to keep, you know, highlighting the type of people that are doing the work, but also I think trusting the Lord, I think even more important than highlighting those things, I think really honestly is the person who is listening, who is going, well, what about me? Because I think inevitably there's somebody listening to this podcast who's going, well, I'm doing my best and I'm writing as best I can and I'm trying to grow my platform and I feel called to write and speak and do all the things that you watch these big names do. And where's the Lord in this ministry? And I think to sort of shut down all these voices and believe with all your heart, sort of what the gospel taught us in Acts. Remember in Acts in the early church when Peter and James are starting to heal and to speak and to see people come to Christ, and the leaders wanted to shut him up. And again, they said this about Christ too, which is, if this is from God, no one will be able to shut it. You don't need anybody to recognize your voice. I have spent more time in my ministry world, calling, feeling like an outsider to this day. I'm in my 50s now, to this day. And I can't tell you how hard it is to constantly feel like you're on the outside looking in. And yet what has driven me early on even more so was the sense of, if this is from God, no one will be able to stop you. But that lie that you're on the outside looking in is truly that. It is a lie. Because our goal ultimately is not a million followers. It's not a best-selling book in New York Times list. I mean, those are worldly measures. What our goal is, that one person, and I know it feels so small in a way, but is it small? Is it the one person that is whose life is impacted, who comes back later and says, man, and we all have more than one person, if you're writing or speaking, that will come to you and say, man, I was going this way, I was in the pits, and your book or your words or your blog or your really restored hope for me. And is that not enough? And think about it. If Jesus had died for one person, you, me, would it not have been enough? And I think we have our understanding upside down. And I think part of this maturing process, this process of, you know, the works that God has prepared beforehand, that we should walk in them, I think we miss that the end goal isn't a big CV that says, look all what all I've done. It's a person that genuinely becomes more Christ-like in showing mercy, in going to places that others may not be comfortable going, and sitting at tables, even maybe in churches where they don't recognize you as a woman, but are willing to stay and do the work because it's going to help pave the way for that 10s, 15s, 20-year-olds that are going, I'm not going to stay at this church if they can't see me. Well, maybe you're the mom, or maybe you're the aunt, or maybe you're the single woman who's going to stay and show them what it looks like to serve in a capacity that in your mind doesn't even, the word mercy wasn't even in my agenda in my 20s and 30s, but yet God, that being merciful is being Christ-like. And so as the Lord has grown me and transformed me, I think if you can see any mercy in me, I guarantee you it is not inbred in my DNA. It is because the Holy Spirit has allowed that gift to grow over time because of a desire to be more like Him. And He will always honor that, whether you're a Dorina Lazo Gilmore Young or a Stephanie Roussel or many of the others of you who are listening who think nobody knows your name. Listen, God knows your name. He sees you. He knows you. And you will be blown away by what He will do. But it will come in His time and in His way. And I'm telling myself these things even now as I continue to walk in the calling that He's invited me to.
Lena, thank you so much. Okay, I had no idea how much I personally needed to hear from you today. I was honored and surprised by your response to that question. But even more so, I hope and pray that someone is listening to this broadcast today who needed to hear that message. So thank you for speaking hope and truth. Thank you for being a person who walks in mercy. I'm grateful for you. Take care.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Hear Women. We pray that you are encouraged, challenged, and inspired as a result of this conversation. Thank you for joining us as we listen to women for the good of the church.
Hear Women is a production of InterVarsity Press. For more information on any IVP titles mentioned in this episode, visit ivpress.com and use the promo code in the show notes for a special discount. Sound engineering by Honest Podcasts. Our producers are Christine Pellicchio Mello, Helen Lee, and Travis Albritton. Our research assistants are Abby Lee and Jasmine Rose, and we're your hosts, Darina Lazo Gilmore-Young, Tara Beth Leach, and Nija Gupta.
Be sure to subscribe to Hear Women on your favorite podcast platform or the IVP YouTube channel, and please leave a rating and review to support the show.